Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studio where you'll hear a conversation about presentation design, strategies, tips, and tricks, running a design studio, and more. Here are your hosts from inside the design studio, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz, and I'm located in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Hi, this is Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California near San Diego, and I'm glad you could join us for this episode of the Presentation Podcast.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
We're recording this episode a bit ahead of schedule, but let's take a moment here and hear what's happening with us in our studios.
As I've reported the last couple of times, I'm really getting into a speaker readiness process for a conference that I'm a part of in May. And really good news, I'm onboarding a new client that just happens to be the second largest privately held company in the world.
And I'm just finishing up one of those last minute SOS please from a client before an investor presentation. I think I talked before about the funnel. Sort of clients spend all this time and money, you know, putting together these investor presentations, thinking about it, and then at the last minute they remember, oh yeah, it should actually look good and be able to communicate something. So I'm helping them with that right now.
Everyone presents at some point. Today, we're talking about our tips and best practices for using presentation software. We're not looking at speech coaching, stagecraft, or presenting a message, all very important skills, but what a presenter should focus on behind the scenes and before the meeting begins. This is what we, as presentation designers, see that a presenter should know and think of when planning, presenting, and making things work when something goes awry.
So in coming up with this episode's topic, we brainstormed, and here's the short list of what type of presentations we're talking about, because they're basically everything under the sun. In terms of size, we're talking about large conferences, huge ballrooms. Really, whether it's 100 people or 10,000 people. Smaller places where we've got web viewing audiences, or small boardrooms, even one-to-one presentations. In terms of software, PowerPoint, Keynote, Prezi, I know we're very PowerPoint-centric, but really this applies to lots of other software, and we all work with other software. In terms of delivery, on desktop, mobile, web-based software, these are lots of variables, all of their own needs, but they all sort of fall under this sort of live presenting topic. And very often when I explain sort of what I've done to audiences, trying to explain my experience, I'll say, I've worked on every type of presentation. Basically, anytime where there's somebody standing there and there's some sort of visual behind them, whatever that might have been, I've been there. I've done it. I've worked on those visuals, that sort of visual support for a speaker.
Well, this is all definitely my world of presentation design, all about the pre-planning, pre-determining technical specs, pre-everything so that you're ready to go before you hit the stage. The first item on my list in preparing a presentation for a presenter is to ask the presenter what the meeting is set up for. Basically, confirm the meeting setup is 16:9, 4:3, or something unique. In addition, if you are just one of the presenters, so there's a number of presenters and you're one of those presenters, you want to show up and know what the meeting setup is. In addition to having your slides either 16:9 or 4:3 to conform to the overall setup so you don't look like the odd person out, you want to know about things like, is it rear projection or front projection? That'll let you know if you can walk around the stage, if you can walk in front of the screen or not. You want to know about the lighting control. If you have an area where you want to raise the lights to get the audience participation, is that a possibility? So don't plan for it if you're told by the meeting event AV team that lighting control is just not an option. Only the stage lighting is pretty common. But it's nice to know about those things so you're not thrown off. You need to envision how your stage time will work. And you can't do it if you don't know some of the technical parameters. So the start of a presentation for me is usually going through a bunch of technical questions, finding out the answers so that we know the overall environment, and then we can plan the presentation design to accommodate that environment.
It can be some weird screen size too, Troy. I know you've seen this. 16:9, 4:3 are kind of standard, but we've seen everything, right? Square, 16:10, 2:4, right?
Oh, absolutely. I see all kinds of configurations, aspect ratios. Matter of fact, just right now, I've got a project in with a brand new one for me. It's 60 by 9, 60 by 9. Super, super long, thin rectangle is the aspect ratio. So it's everything is possibility. Always want to know what it is up front.
We're going to keep coming back to this, but these are questions if your presenter, even if you're having somebody else design, you need to ask your conference organizers or whoever the AV team is. Don't just assume it's going to be widescreen. Don't assume it's going to be 4:3. It can be anything. You've got to get sort of this information as early as possible. Whenever one of my clients starts at, you know, they say I'm presenting live. Great. What's the screen size? It's always the first question I ask. Because very often it takes like a week to two to get the answer, right?
Right. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I have to go ask. And then the other thing is, are you going to bring your own computer? Do you have to send your presentation in advance? Will they be loading it on a production computer on site? Or are you literally going to walk up and plug in your computer?
Yeah. And don't just stop it. Oh yeah. The AV says we're using PowerPoint. What version of PowerPoint? Ask as many questions. We've seen AV teams convert PowerPoints all to PDF, convert things to Keynote or vice versa. Go back. Maybe they're running on PowerPoint 2007 for some reason. So it's always a surprise once you get there. So try to get all those questions answered way up front.
Oftentimes presenters will want videos in their PowerPoint, and that's great. It's so much easier than it was in, you know, I remember the days when it was a problem.
Oh, I remember that video.
However, you just never know. So it's always a good idea to have that video as a backup. It's just as easy for the crew on site to switch over if there's some sort of glitch with running the video in PowerPoint.
Yeah, just because it plays on your computer is zero guarantee it's going to play on anybody else's computer.
Well, I would tag on to that you mean, Sandy, to bring like the video on a USB drive. Like,
yes.
Here's the video, not in a presentation. It's the video file or files and all that good stuff. Yeah. Video, larger conferences will use, it's a great Mac system called Playback Pro, but it's a video player. So a lot of times when a video is going to run full screen, conferences want to run it on a separate system from the PowerPoint or Keynote machine. Or they'll use even larger video playback systems. They're separate. So being able to hand it off to them is what makes you a really good looking person to the AV crew. And it's just a really smart idea.
Right. This all goes back to asking those questions up front. How do you play the videos? And the AV team will say, embed them in the presentation or don't. You know, hopefully, you know, just starting that all those questions up front saves you a lot of time down the road.
And if it is embedded, which is a great way to go because we can now do that, I think when it's embedded, we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but don't count on having access to the actual computer. So you need the video to play either automatically, like when you go to the slide with a video, the video starts playing, or on the next click, the advance of an animation, it starts playing, not moving your mouse around on the screen and clicking it. You can't count on that. As a best practice, don't count on having access to a mouse or a trackpad to move the cursor around. And also, don't plan on using Microsoft's default. And that's the real issue is I don't think Microsoft's really helping the scenario in that when they insert a video in PowerPoint, it sets it up with a trigger animation. Trigger animations are fantastic, but they do require you to move a mouse on screen. A lot of conferences, you don't have access to that or you don't want to do that. So you need to strip out that animation and put in a new animation that says play automatic.
What about format? What's the conventional thinking on what's the best video format to use these days?
You know, that is the most complex question, but my general at this point default is an MP4 embedded. It works on virtually everything. There are instances where it won't work if you're running on an older OS, if you're running on an older version.
Like my client last week.
MOVs. Right. Oh, really?
So I had to go back and encode it as a WMV and throw it in there.
If you want to guarantee it's going to work, WMV, Windows Media Video, not the highest quality format, but it's guaranteed to work because it's the Windows codec and it does work on every Windows machine. It's not my absolute favorite, MP4 MOV, much higher quality and probably my preferred, but that is a whole topic. There's just so many things to go with it. It's It's crazy.
Yeah, right. And we'll get to that. But it's not going. It's going to work on PCs. It's not going to work on a Mac without extra software. So it's there is no absolutely, you know, will work on every single machine format. But didn't you, Troy? Didn't you used to do something, or maybe you still do, where in a show file you would actually put both versions one after the other with one of the slides hidden?
When we're sending this off to a presenter that doesn't know the environment they're going to be in, or a sales force, a lot of times where they're going to be handing off the presentation, the first version of the video is the MP4. I think that's the best one. Right behind it, we put another slide that's hidden, and it has a WMV version. So it's the exact same slide. It just has a second format of the video. Therefore, if something goes wrong or if the presenter can determine that the first version, the higher quality, is not going to work, they just hide that slide and unhide the other, and they have both available to them right then and there. It does make the file size larger, but it does, at this stage, still help guarantee options for making things not fail during the presentation.
Thanks to you, Troy, I employed that strategy, and it's worked. It saved my butt. So
I used it once or twice, too.
Yeah.
And obviously, all your volume levels, as best you can, you know, they should be about the same. If you have a, you know, really great tech team and you have different volumes, you know, they'll ride them and make sure things work out, but that's a luxury. So try to do as much as you can in advance. And you can, even if your videos don't have the same volume coming in, you can then go into PowerPoint and play with the volume levels on a per video basis. So just try to get them generally the same.
And I think that's something a lot of people don't realize, is that there is actually a volume control in both PowerPoint, Keynote. I don't know about Prezi, to be honest. But there's a volume slider in there. And when you insert it into PowerPoint, it inserts a video at 90%. So there's a little bit of up and a lot of down. So you can go through and more or less level out your own volume settings. Also, mute out. If you've got a television commercial you're going to run, but you don't want to hear it, just hit the mute button or lower the volume all the way. That way, nobody can play the music by mistake or, you know, the soundtrack to that commercial. It's just there is no sound coming out with that video. You can do it all within the presentation software. You as the presenter can preset that.
I like that. At the meeting, the other thing that I like to ask is, or make sure that my presenter is ready to do, is know how they're going to advance through the slides.
Oh, yeah.
For example, sometimes they need to verbally mention that they have to whomever is running.
Next slide, Jim.
It is. I know this isn't a coaching conversation, but I try to help them do it as discreetly as possible so they sound as professional as possible.
The only thing worse than next slide is, and this slide says.
This slide, exactly. And then the other is, do you have someone in the back room who's going to be advancing? So really, it's just a light signal. And Troy, you have the technical term for this.
It's a cue light.
Cue light, exactly. That basically you're not advancing. You're cueing someone in the backstage to move, advance the slide. And now you have to be aware that there's going to be a split second delay.
Well, let's actually talk about the remotes. So
yeah, talk about the reason why you wouldn't want to give the presenter control themselves to advance.
On stage, people get nervous. It's just what happens. Even polished presenters will admit this. And a remote is just something, it's small, it's in your hand, and you can, I've had presenters, you know, nervous clicking it, like, hey, it's a little thing to play with. You know, people play with a pen. You ever heard the pen clicker, like the presenter that's click, 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 you know, and they're holding it right up next to their microphone, but, you know, so the whole audience. Anyways, the remote becomes another nervous thing. So suddenly they're advancing through 20, 30 clicks, and they don't even realize it. The other one is there's a forward and a back on most remotes, but people slide their finger up and they start hitting the back button thinking they're going forward. Very, very frazzling to a presenter. It can happen. So suddenly, you know, all these different things can happen with just being nervous and on stage and unfamiliar. For large meetings where the presenter does not have direct access to their computer, which is 95% of the meetings I do, my favorite is by a company called Desan. And it's the Desan Q-Lite. It's kind of the AV industry standard for slide advancers. It's a very compact little remote to hold. It's super expensive, and it gets set up in a couple of different ways. I know, Nolan, you have your personal favorite. Yeah,
I've used both. I like the Logitech. Generally, I'm not doing as large presentations as you are these days, but I like the Logitech. It's user controlled, so you plug the USB into the computer and you're controlling it. But I have used the Desan in the past, and they are wicked expensive because I think they're like they're the only people around. But you can explain more. But that is where you're queuing somebody backstage to actually advance the computer.
So I'll just say I actually have two levels of remotes. I have the industrial Desan remote for the presenter on stage. It has a 100+ foot range. Nothing gets in its way. The click is received. And I like it, but really it's usually set up to just give me a cue in the back, a little audible tone and a light. And then at that point, I actually advance the show computers. And I did say that in plural because every conference, there's at least two computers running in sync for every presentation. I've done it all the way up to 12 computers running in sync. But to run the show computers, I personally use the Interlink Navigator remote. I love Interlink products. They're all radio frequency. I like the Navigator. It's a very compact, easy to use remote. I like the fact that forward is on the right and back is on the left, so there's no mistaking which side you're going for. I have the Logitech 400 presenter that you use, Nolan, a lot. I use that a lot. But the really cool thing about the Navigator remote that most can't do is you can add receivers, the parts that plug into the computer. So I can have one remote run many computers simultaneously. So in almost every instance, I have a primary and a backup show computer, and I just one click, I advance the graphics on both of them. So the presenter cues, I get a light, I advance, and everything runs in sync. I've actually run, like I said, I've done 12 computers off of one remote.
So you're not hitting the space bar on multiple computers at the same time.
No, that feels like you should be a monkey.
And I don't do what you do, Troy. I have a Logitech for my personal use, but I've been on site where literally they're clicking two space bars at the same time.
Yeah, that's a little old school. It's definitely adds room for error. There's a lot of different things there. You can also set those Desan remotes up to actually, they're a great USB remote. The dilemma is they only do two, and I'm usually doing more than two. If they're doing the space bars, I mean, you could hit the wrong button. You could, the arrow keys.
And you kind of glossed over it, but the reason you have at least two computers, one is a backup, which means
yes.
So whatever the feed going to the screen is, that's just at any time is one computer. But if that computer crashes, you simply switch. You have a quick AV switch backstage. You just switch over, and now you're on the backup computer while you restart the main computer and try to get that working again.
Everything has backups.
Everything has backups, and we'll certainly talk about that more. But no, in this particular case, it was a last minute request by the keynote, the CEO of the company, and how he wanted to see his notes.
Oh, yeah, that's...
It was awful.
Is that where while the show was going, you had to make an edit?
No, it's like the day before. No, I want my notes to be shown this way.
In the downstage monitors?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it was a nightmare.
That's a whole topic, yes. But there's lots of ways around that. I mean, teleprompter systems are obviously the best, but we do what we call power prompter, PowerPoint turned into a teleprompter, power prompter notes, which is just a bunch of PowerPoint slides. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about presenter view and where it's great and where it just isn't available.
Exactly.
Before we get there, let's assume you've got your presentation all set up. You've gotten all these technical information. You've tested it. You know your videos are good. You've got backups of your videos. You know the remote system. How do you know the remote system? And that's rehearsals. It's best for you. It's absolutely best for the AV crew who's there trying to make you look good. And a stage walk is kind of the precursor to a rehearsal. And this should be part of your rehearsals. And if you don't do anything else, request a stage walk when you as a presenter go to a meeting. Even if you've done the meeting 500 times, every crew is a little different. You just want to be in sync. So a stage walk is basically the head of the AV team walking each presenter on stage before the meeting starts. No one's in the room. This is all ahead of time. It could be a night before or whatever. Making sure you're familiar with everything. How do you get on the stage? Do you come up on stage left, stage right? Do you come from the backstage area? Is there a green room? Is there a reserved seat for you? What are your DSMs? Downstage monitors. There may be one of them. There may be multiple of them. What's going to be shown to you on those monitors? And make sure you know what's on the left one and what's on the right one. There could be four, six, eight of them across. Make sure you know it's there so you're comfortable, not surprised. I mean, usually those are your slides. But like we were just talking about, those could be your notes too. And there's a couple of different ways that works. So the stage walk is really, really critical because it gets you in sync with that AV crew. It's kind of to help you, but it's also to get the AV crew to kind of anticipate what to do for you. So it's in your best interest.
And, you know, a good AV crew is going to request it themselves and want you to do it. But again, every situation under the sun, maybe they're short on time. Just if you're the presenter, insist on it.
Well, presenters are usually the ones to say, I don't need it. Right. And then no one's in sync. And although a presenter knows their talk, there's just a lot of good reasons to make it happen.
Yeah. Trust me, it's more important to do that for 5 minutes than to rehearse your speech backstage.
Now, I know we're not talking stagecraft or coaching, but Sandy, you always take your executives through.
We do. We don't just become familiar with the stage. We make sure that they walk through the presentation. They become familiar with the remote, the cue light, if that's the case, the transitions. If they're not familiar with the teleprompter, I'll even rent the teleprompter in advance. Depending on the stakes, I will bring it into the company and have them practice before they even get on stage.
That's a great idea. I've seen a lot of people. I mean, teleprompters can be in the downstage, but if they're using presidentials, which are little glass plates in front of you, people aren't familiar with it. They're awesome.
Yeah, that's a skill.
Until you don't know about it. Yes, it's a skill. So that's awesome.
And once you're on the stage, I was at a presentation a couple months ago, and somebody was speaking, and halfway into it, she like 20, 30 minutes into it, she said, you can see my slides, right? They're up. And the audience said, yeah, they've been there. She said, oh, well, that's good. Cause I was doing a presentation a while back and my slides never came up. And it wasn't until like I was done with the presentation that I realized they had never turned on the screen behind me. So no matter where you are, just glance behind you. Once you actually step up onto the stage, make sure everything is there.
Was she talking to the downstage monitor? So she saw the slides, but the audience didn't.
She had her laptop in front of her, so she was looking at them, never even bothered to just do a little 180 glance to make sure that slides were there. So
I haven't heard that one.
It's going to happen, it's going to happen. I just wanted to add another reason for practicing is the schedule. It's the timing. And out of respect for the audience and the other speakers, I think you need to have that, you know, on stage, off stage, all that stuff worked through to keep the conference, the session very, very professional and on time. Again, think about the audience.
Absolutely. Because something always happens and somebody has to get cut short. Oh, somebody went long or something else.
There.
Okay, I'll talk one more on rehearsals. Okay. Speaking of timing, and this is more about a presentation failure. And the place I see things just fall apart the most is at awards shows. And I have personal philosophy. Nolan, you have philosophies about stuff we talked about a couple episodes ago. This is mine on award shows, because an award show is supposed to be memorable for the recipient. Presenter is there just to be, I mean, it's their responsibility to make sure things go perfect and the recipient feels special. They're receiving an award. So as a presenter in an award show, insist that everyone that will be on stage do a dry run, just like Sandy was talking about. Everyone needs to be 100% confident they know how the names will be announced, how they will be pronounced, because how do you want to be the recipient and your name is said wrong?
We're looking at you, John Travolta.
It happens. Hey, you know my last name. It never gets done right. But know what the audience sees on the screens before the name is announced. Know what happens when the name is announced to go in order. That's the big one. Go in order. In other words, if you have something that says these are the names, you have to go in that order. I don't care if you just saw Sue down there and you know she's an award winner and you want to catch her and give her award out right now. Nothing else in that whole presentation is set for that. Maybe there's walk-up music cued to each person. Maybe there's lighting cues for each person. Maybe the slides need to be presented in the exact order because they're not going to be jumped around. If you as a presenter just go rogue, like I just said, failure at award shows is big. Maybe it's because there's usually an open bar. And then there's dinner with wine. And things just tend to go wrong in those situations if you can't be on autopilot. Okay, I'm done.
Here's a little tip on if you're a speaker and you often have other people introduce you that you don't know, this happens all the time, put your introduction on a piece of paper the way you want that person to introduce you. Now, I've had people look at it and then put it into their own words and they're great. But also with that, if you have a first or last name that can be mispronounced, like I do, Hames, put it on the paper, Mine says, Nolan Hames in parentheses rhymes with games. Because no matter how many times you tell them before you could spend an hour with them, they get on stage, they look at that paper, and suddenly it becomes Hymes or Haynes or something else.
That's brilliant. Yeah, phonic pronunciations for award shows, and in this case for your introduction, is a smart idea.
So we've talked a little bit already about presenter view and teleprompters and notes, but let's talk specifically about what I think is one of the greatest tools in PowerPoint, and there's a version in Keynote as well of this, for reducing the amount of text on slides, and that is presenter view. And I say it's this great tool for reducing the amount of text because I get from a lot of people, they say, oh, I need to put all my bullet points, all my text on the slide so I know what I have to say. And I say, well, that's for you. Your slides are for the audience. All those speaker notes, all those prompts, those are your notes, and those should go into presenter view. So what presenter view is it gives you a separate screen, a different view. The audience sees just the slide on whatever screen is up there, the big screen behind you. You, either on your laptop or in these downstage monitors or confidence monitors, you see a different view. And your view is the current slide, a thumbnail of it, and then a smaller thumbnail of the next slide, your speaker notes, which you can expand and make big or small, and also some things like current time and time elapsed. And you do have some control over customization in the most current versions of PowerPoint and in Keynote. So it's your own personal teleprompter, basically, without renting those presidential glass things.
Exactly. I love 2013 and 2016. It looks a lot different in 2010, and I don't think you have that flexibility. So you do need to know which version this is ultimately going to be presented on, with, I guess is the term. But so the notes pane, the current slide pane, and the next slide pane can all be adjusted in size. So if you're the presenter that, like Nolan mentioned, that needs to have your notes in front of you, you can enlarge that notes area in PowerPoint 2013 and 2016 and make the text large.
And the other great thing about the current versions, I believe, is that it's on by default. It used to be back in 2010 and earlier, you had to actively check box and know where to check to sort of implement presenter view. But now I believe when you have two monitors, displays connected, it will automatically send one to presenter view.
If you have a multiple monitor setup, so if you plug your computer into a projector, you have two monitors, and PowerPoint now works with the operating system and actually splits you out to extended view. So presentations out on one and presenter views on your local monitor, you can switch them around, which is kind of funny because to me, it's more of a nuisance because for larger conferences, don't count on presenter view being available just because there's hardware limitations. The laptop has one video out and that's going to go to the projector system. It's, you know, not in my case, it's not direct to the projector. It's going to a switcher and everything else, but there's not two video outs. So the downstage monitor has to show what the audience sees because that's what's up there. So you end up with a little bit more of a limitation in the fact that the computers are backstage. You don't want me seeing presenter view because I'm not interested in it. And what you're going to see in the downstage monitor is a reflection of exactly what the audience sees. So you do need to come up with some other plans. It's teleprompter or power prompter, which is actually a second presentation running the notes. So presenter view gets less use in my world, but it is a cool feature. I actually have a tip about it at the end.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Troy, but there are hardware setups where you can have presenter view on some of those monitors, but it's a special setup, right?
Absolutely. It's pre-planning. It's all about the equipment being put in place. And if the conference says they want it, it's about how things get routed and the computer systems being set up to handle it. But if you just show up and say you need it and the conference doesn't have it as a preset hardware setup, it's not going to happen. So there are other alternatives to it. But yeah, you just generally end up more of a hardware limitation, not a limitation on how cool or useful the feature is. It's usually conference hardware setup is not really geared towards it.
And that you've made the key. It's the pre-planning. It's kind of the common theme here. When I work with my keynote presenters, I ask them specifically, how do you want your notes to be managed? How are you most comfortable? How can we best leverage your presentation skills with technology? And if it happens to be that I need two monitors down there, and one of them has to be presenter view, then I just make arrangements for that.
Yeah, I mean, every speaker is different. Some people like note cards. I don't think they look very good, but some people like, you know, a sheet of paper on a lectern. Some people don't need notes at all. Some people are very dependent on them. So again, it's all part of the pre-planning.
And that's another one of those where we first started. Ask way in advance of the presentation what your technical setup is. And you may say, I like to use presenter view. Is that available? If it's known ahead of time, it can be put in place for our budget requests. But hey, speaking of the note cards and the piece of paper, it doesn't happen a lot, but every presenter needs a plan for when things go wrong. Mm-hmm. And your note cards may be the crutch that you have or your backup plan. I mean, comedians learn how to have a plan when they end up with an audience that has that one heckler. The military has contingency plans for virtually any situation not going as planned. And they have backups for the backups of the backups. A good presenter needs to have a plan if things don't go as planned.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think I should think about it more often with my presenters, what happens if things go wrong. But in general, I've worked with such great presenters that most often the audience doesn't even know something went wrong. They deal with it very, very professionally.
Well, that's the big thing. I mean, I used to be a performer in a couple of different ways years ago. And, you know, I learned that way back then that 95% of the time, if something goes wrong and you don't point it out, the audience doesn't know it. So, I mean, if there's a missing slide in your deck or an operator skips over an animation or something, if you don't point it out, the audience won't know it. The moment you point it out, you've made it a mistake. So it's kind of on you.
After more than 15 years of being backstage at every size meeting, I have lots of stories about when things go bad. And I can tell you which presenters were incredible and had a plan when things happened. And the good ones do just what you said. They just skip right past it and keep going. Nobody knows that there was a whole section, a video that was missed, a guest presenter that was supposed to come on stage and help them out. If they just carry it over, it's just their presentation. You don't know. The common issue is the presentation remotes we're talking about. That's the most common thing that doesn't work, or the person doesn't work them. You know, they click it 30 times and we turn it off because they're being nervous clickers. So you just need to roll into a backup plan, which is usually in the case of a remote, just announcing, hey, this thing doesn't seem to be working until that's fixed. I'm just going to say next, which is the thing we said we don't like, but it's a plan to keep things going rather than everything looking poorly.
Or rather than stopping the presentation, hey, can I get a better remote?
Yeah.
And everybody
yeah,
scrambles
just keep
around.
Going.
Exactly. And then the presenter becomes applauded for
exactly.
handling it so professionally. It's almost like, look what you accomplished in spite of the, or despite, no, in spite of the technical difficulties. Speaking of technical difficulties, this is a little different. It's not on stage. I was giving a webinar with Microsoft, and they were supposed to, after introducing me, turn over the presentation to me, and I was going to be giving a live demo. At the last minute, I had this this is before the actual webinar began. I had this thought, what if it doesn't work? Just what if? And I ended up sending a million screenshots of my demo to Microsoft just in case, so it wouldn't be live. And lo and behold, when Microsoft, during the webinar, turned over the presentation to me, no one could see anything. So I literally had to give it back to Microsoft. They walked through my screenshots one at a time. I talked through my screenshots, and I had to ask them to advance the slide.
Oh, it's perfect, though. You had a backup plan. I do a lot of live demos, and we always have a backup plan. I'm like, I need an offline version of something we can do. And it's a really funny conversation when they're like, but we're not using online. We're not on the web. It's me connecting my computer. I'm like, yeah, but you're running beta software is what you just told me. Do we have a backup for it? And yeah, even if it's not used, it makes everybody more comfortable. If you're on stage, you should feel more comfortable, not sweating it like, oh, please work, please work, please work, please work. You should say, okay, I'm ready to go, because if this doesn't work, I'm going to make those guys run that demo video I created and, you know, screen capture video, and we're going to run through it. That was awesome, Sandy. That's exactly what you need to do.
Okay. There's also the backup with hardware. With the new PowerPoint 2016 subscription, even people that are as talented as you, Troy, in the backstage don't know if they have the latest versions. And it becomes a challenge. I'm bringing my Surface Pro book with all the latest updates so that I can make sure, for example, my morph transitions work properly.
That's a great plan. I won't deny that there are problems with everybody knowing. I actually think that PowerPoint has gotten very confusing because it's not, are you on 2016? It's what build are you on? And are you on subscription versus perpetual? All those things we talked about. And it's very difficult to get that information. Okay. So I'm going to just wrap up the when things go wrong part with
this. Give us your crazy stories.
I've got a crazy one. And this presenter handled a true crisis. Amazing. So large conference, probably 1,000+ people in the audience, big stage, big screens, big meeting, no windows, all the doors are closed. So, you know, you're in a big ballroom. It's its own environment. In the middle of the talk, everything goes black. I mean, just pitch black. I was sitting backstage. My computers kept glowing because I'm working on laptops. They have their own UPS built in. But, you know, it's just not a good scenario when everything is just done and the audience is in pitch black. The presenters on the stage in pitch black, no power, the AV crew, you know, we couldn't talk to each other because we're all using a comm system, but it requires power. And these big 20,000 lumen projectors, they're going to take a little while to warm up, even if the power does come back on. So this presenter is not going to have their slides. This presenter without missing a beat. I mean, just things go black, instantly yells, who forgot to pay the electric bill? It was awesome. Everybody suddenly went from that kind of what's going on to, oh, that was humorous. He actually said, I'm not going to move because I'm not going to fall off the stage. So you guys could just ask me questions until things get going. And it was great. It was truly a bad scenario. It wasn't the meeting. The whole ballroom, the whole convention center lost power. Some truck had backed into the major transformer and it was done. But it was a great, I mean, that was a couple of years ago and I remember it immediately because that was a presenter that handled things and had more or less a backup plan ready to go.
So here, I'll give you a quick story. The opposite of that in terms of acknowledging the problem, which you have to do if everyone in the room knows it's a problem. A speech coach I work with a lot was coaching somebody and this was at the Moscone Center. And he was in the middle of his big, I think it was a doctor, he was in the middle of this big sort of pharma thing. And a curtain on the side caught fire. And he saw it. Everybody saw it. And the tech crew, you know, scrambled for fire extinguishers and started putting it out. And it took like, you know, took 20 seconds, 30 seconds to sort of get it all out. During the whole time, even though he saw it, he acted as though he didn't and kept talking and just kept talking through his, you know, doctor this, medical thing that. And of course, the problem, you know, he thought he was doing the whole like, oh, the show must go on. The problem is nobody's listening to him. Everyone's looking at the curtain going up in flames. So they eventually got it out and he just kept going and finished his speech. Acknowledge something if everyone else sees it.
Let's talk about some design tips when you're in a large meeting environment. For example, I don't work on as large of screens as Troy, but this is when presentation best practices really have to come into play. Keep your text content to a minimum. That's what I recommend. And use keywords or graphics.
Remember the bottom third rule. At least that's what I call it. In a lot of situations where you don't have raked seating, where all the audience is on the same plane, most of the people can't see the bottom third of the screen if that screen, for example, goes all the way down to the stage because the heads are in the way. So in those situations, I say don't put anything important on the bottom third of the screen. Keep it at the top of the screen.
That's what footnotes and references are for, that little text you don't really care about but have to be there. That's a great
can't read, but the lawyers insist you have to put there anyway.
You know, as far as your content goes and the design of it, not the amount of content, that's a whole huge scenario and the position of it. But they're really, it's how is it going to be projected? How's the audience going to see it? And there's three options. It's projection, it's an LED wall, or it's a flat screen. All of them have different color and resolution characteristics that you need to consider when designing your content. So if you have one of those, if you have a picture with text overlaying on it, if it's projection, you're going to need to go with really high contrast because projection tends to wash things out. Even when it's super when it's really big projectors, when it's really, really good scenarios, you're still going to get a little bit of a washout. The room lighting can affect it. There's so many things there. If it's an LED wall, you're going to want to avoid thin lines and small text, because an LED wall is literally large pixels placed side by side, and vertical lines especially can get lost if they happen to align right between the pixels. Now, the flat screen, no matter what the size is.
And when you say flat screen, you mean like a TV
screen? Like a TV screen. Yeah, like a giant one. Like the one that I just mentioned earlier that I went and helped Lori with this big pitch. I mean, that was like a 100-inch flat screen. It was big. Those are the closest to your computer monitor. They've got high contrast. They've got really rich blacks. The pixel density is great. So those are probably the least problematic when it comes to thinking about things like contrast and how's the audience going to see it. So those are big.
And there are a few things on your laptop itself, or if you control your computer, that you should set. Right?
Well, if it's going to be your computer put in place, even if you don't control it, maybe you take your computer backstage. Best practices, no screensaver, have your power adapter plugged in, even if you have a 12-hour battery, because when it's unplugged, different power settings go into effect than when it is plugged in. Supply your password if you can't take it. If you can't turn it off, give your password to somebody backstage. Make a temporary password. Make sure your volume is on full. If you have any multimedia, have your own display adapters. So have those things.
So you know what happened to me the other day? So I'm training. So not a huge situation, but in presenter view, screen's up there, and I go to advance to the next slide. Nothing's happening. So I look down at my screen, and what popped up was, hey, Windows would like to update you. Click OK. Now, fortunately, it didn't show on the second screen, so the audience didn't see it. But I saw it and I had to click cancel to continue. Now, as far as I know, I genuinely don't think I can avoid that, right?
Well, that's Windows 10, right? I'm just guessing.
No. I think that was actually Windows 8.
Oh, the Windows 8 saying we'd like to give you Windows 10?
I don't know.
Yes, probably. So that is actually a huge advantage of presenter view. All those notices pop up on the local monitor and not externally. That's probably my biggest reason for saying presenter view is awesome, because it does it. But what happened is the focus went away from PowerPoint, so none of the controls are working there. The focus switched to this little notification, which is more of a Windows thing. That's awesome that you caught it in time.
And that was an example of I called attention to it.
Oh,
partly, it was a casual thing. You know, I'm training, and so I like to tell people, avoid this, and I give them advice on software. So I actually brought it up and made an issue of it. But if I was, if it was a bigger deal, I would have just silently clicked it, said nothing, and gone on, and the audience wouldn't.
So I use the term content density, which is a polite way of saying you have too many words, charts, and stuff on your slide. Does anybody else?
What's the non-polite way of saying that?
Your slide stinks.
I say content heavy.
I mean, this is an entire topic. We need to kind of, this is more of a slide design and what's best for the audience. But as a best practice, I think I can simplify it by saying less on a screen is better. You talking through the details and being the expert, not a reader of the slide, is better. So
the metaphor I always use is, when people are speaking, I said, you are the star. And that's what the audience is most interested. Your slides are your backup singer.
Awesome.
Right. So you're Mick Jagger, your slides are your backup singers. Now, like backup singers, your slides need to be in tune, they need to be attractive, but at the end of the day, nobody's buying a ticket to see them. So
that's great.
Keep the focus on you.
I love it. There is, I think, an opportunity to talk about this in another podcast, but there's science behind it as well. Yeah. People just don't learn from, they don't take away what you want them to take away when they have all that stuff on the slide, all that content on the slide. You know, there's Richard Mayer's multimedia learning, there's Nancy's Resonate. There's a lot of science behind why we design slides to look good.
I think that's an episode. We'll mark that down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we'll do that.
Yeah. Well, it also goes with the previous one, why to hire a presentation expert, because you don't have to be the expert in knowing those things. We'll help you. Hey, let me just wrap things up, because I know we're running out of time here, but being a presenter is a great thing. It means someone trusts you to deliver a message. And then just like the Spider-Man movies, with great power comes great responsibility. So don't be the last minute, unprepared, non-conforming presenter that brings everything down a level. I know we covered a lot of great tips, tricks, best practices, and people are there to see the presenters. And you as a presenter hopefully you get asked to present a lot. Use this information to become an even better presenter, at least a more prepared presenter.
Exactly. My words of wisdom are practice, practice, practice. And I've come from working with an organization where the executives literally our first meeting said, well, executives don't practice their presentations that much, do they? Seriously. And today we've completely turned that around to where the company's executives begin presenter readiness as early as 4 months before their keynotes. So again, practice, practice.
I don't know if I think maybe I mentioned that great Guardian UK article on the preparation and rehearsal that went into a Steve Jobs keynote. I think in a previous podcast.
But bring it up.
Yeah. So it's just a wonderful article from the inside written by one of the presenters on how much prep they put into the Apple keynotes. And last week, I finally saw Jobs, the Aaron Sorkin film, and I had a lot of issues with it. But what I loved about it was they showed the intensity of the preparation for all those keynotes. Because if you haven't seen the film, it basically takes place at three keynotes over the course of a number of years of product launches, backstage and in rehearsal and on stage. So it really just shows the intensity that Jobs and Apple sort of gave to the rehearsal and the prep, and everything had to be perfect, and they wanted the exit signs to go out, just to get the perfect sort of theatricality. So it's definitely worth a watch.
I will have to put that on my viewing list. Okay, pro tip section, always fun, exciting for me. Here's mine, and it's going to be presenter view. Even though said you don't get to use it a lot at the meetings, you should be using it on your laptop, and you don't have to be hooked up to a secondary monitor to use it. This is kind of like a hidden little tip. If you don't know it's there, you would probably never find it. So presenter view is available at any point, and you can see your slide, your notes. It's the next slide or the next animation is what's going to show ahead. It has a timer. So here's the way in PowerPoint 13, in PowerPoint 2013 and up, just go into slideshow mode. Move your mouse around, and in the lower left, there's a little pop-up set of icons. The one on the right is like that little three-dot icon. Click that, and that brings up a whole list of things. But one of the options in there is show presenter view. So it suddenly you're in presenter view, and you're just going through on your local monitor seeing presenter view. You can get into it. The quick way is before you start the show mode, hold the Alt key down and then F5. And that enters you into presenter mode right away. It's really, really cool. It's a great tip. And it's something that I think everybody should do to be a better presenter.
Love it. I know there's a way behind the scenes to do that. This is much easier. Thanks for that. My recommendation is to practice with the remote, practice with the clicker, and then stand up, advance the slides, speak out loud, even if you're the only person in the room. I was watching House of Cards recently, and even President Underwood does this.
I tell people the same thing. Don't get embarrassed. Talk out loud. Just mouthing the words is not good enough. You actually have to use your largest voice. Use a black slide. I may have mentioned this before, but either if you hit the B key at any time during a presentation, it will black the screen out. You can also sequence in a black slide, but these are great to use throughout a presentation, to sort of change the pace. But I like using a black slide as the very first slide of my presentation. So the moment I'm introduced, the screen goes black. What it does is it gets the focus on me. And I'll talk for 30 seconds. All focus is on me. It's not about the presentation. Again, the backup singers come in after the star. So again, start with a black slide. It will say you are the presentation, and then you bring your slides in later, secondary.
So for tech tips, I would encourage everyone to Google PPT tools. Steve Rinsberg is a fellow Microsoft PowerPoint MVP, and he has a starter kit, which has some really great add-ins that will make your lives a lot easier. And I think I've talked about them before, but make sure you download that whole add-in starter kit.
Or the design of slides, just to be more efficient in PowerPoint.
Thank you for clarifying. Right. Being more efficient. I think we talked about his hammer tool, which literally nails
awesome.
placeholders into place. You can design much
and it's free.
Quickly.
The starter kit is free. I know that it's actually on every single computer we have. All of our design computers, all of our show computers, highly endorsable.
Do you use what other tools do you use from that?
We'll have an add-ins one because I will say this on the PP Tools starter kit, the one tool that no one else has that Steve has had on there forever. I mean, going back to probably back to PowerPoint 2000. Is it has the small A, big A, and it moves text up incrementally by point. So instead of doing the PowerPoint, 4 point to 6 point to 8 point to 10 point, it'll do 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So you can actually grow your text or increase or decrease by 1 point at a time. I think it's brilliant. And it's a great design tool when you're trying to line things up. And that's an example of something that's on there that no other add-in, and I use a lot of them, has. Okay, my tech tip, we already talked about it, is the Desan remote, and that's spelled D-apostrophe-S-A-N remote. It'll also be in the show notes. We'll give a link to it. Don't expect everybody to run out and buy it because they start at about $500 and they go up from there depending on what the capabilities are. But it is, in my opinion, the best stage remote to have. Every AV crew should have them. I don't supply AV equipment, but I show up with our own Desan remotes in case there's one not available. The one that I do recommend on a personal level is the Interlink Navigator. I just like the feel of it. I like the size of it. I like the durability of it. And I like the fact that I can purchase additional receivers and hook up multiple computers and do some really cool stuff. So those are my two remotes that are in our arsenal of tech tools.
Okay. My tech tip this week is 10i reverse image search. So Google under image search does have a reverse image search, but the one I like using is one that's been around for even longer. It's called 10i.com. And to explain what a reverse image search is, if you have an image, let's say, you're assembling your Franken deck and somebody, there's an image on a slide and you want to use it, but you don't know legally if you can use it. You don't know where it came from to source it, or you want to try to find a higher res version online somewhere. You can upload that image to this website and it will show you around the web where that image lives, where it'll show you on different websites, different blogs. And if you're lucky, it will show you, hey, this image came from this stock house. You can now buy the high res version, use it legally. Here's the sourcing info. So I use it all the time to find out where images come from that people send.
It's a cool tool.
Okay. What percentage of effective is it? 85%?
It totally depends, but it's pretty good. Now, okay. Sometimes it will show you an image on, hey, it's on these four blogs, and none of them have, they've stolen the image as well. They haven't sourced it. So that doesn't help. But I would say more often than not, it shows you where it really came from. And it might be, from a newspaper article. It might be, the New York Times took this photo, or, it's on Shutterstock. So it's, again, just use it all the time.
Do you use the web browser plugin where you can right click on any image and just say search it, or do you do the upload image thing?
Oh, does TinEye have a plugin?
They do. It doesn't work with the new Microsoft browser.
I'll look into it. I just usually upload it to the site.
So I just did a quick search. It's been around for a while. We use it a lot, and I actually did a tutorial on TinEye back in 2012. So its database, Sandy, is constantly growing. So they've got several years of image calling, and it's pretty cool. We use it quite a bit.
Yeah, there are browser plugins for Firefox, Chrome, Safari.
This is Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, a design studio team focused on presentation design. Check us out at www.tlccreative.com and my blog, now in its eighth year, all about PowerPoint presentations, www.thepowerpointblog.com.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. You can subscribe for lots of free downloads and goodies. If your organization is interested in on-site presentation or data visualization training, drop me a line or go to nolanhamescreative.com.
And I'm Sandra Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website at presentationwiz.biz and my blog at pptwizblog. Or just search for Sandra Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
For today's episode, show notes, links, and more, visit us at our website, thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website. If you like us, rate us and leave us a review on iTunes. It's always appreciated. You could contact us with show suggestions, questions for the host, or leave a comment at our podcast website. Look for new episodes every first and third Tuesday of each month.